This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems with your host, Patricia Gentile. Patricia Gentile is a taxpayer defense attorney, CPA, the founder of New England Tax Relief, and Patricia L. Gentile Coaching. With 40 years of IRS expertise and experience, she has successfully defended and resolved difficult IRS situations for hundreds of taxpayers. Patricia coaches tax professionals to confidently identify their client's IRS problem and create a successful resolution plan for them. As a fierce advocate, a creative strategist, and solution finder, fighting the good fight with Patricia Gentile is both her passion and purpose. To help tax professionals successfully resolve their clients' tax problems.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Fighting the Good Fight. I am your host, Patricia Gentile, and this podcast is about defending taxpayers and helping them resolve their tax problems. My guest today is attorney Steve Glinsner. He's an attorney out of Southern Florida, and he has been his entire career. Is that correct, Steve? As your no, okay. We'll go.
I've been a lawyer my whole career.
There you go.
I've been doing this tax resolution stuff since 2001. I had a life in the 20th century. This is my 21st century life.
Oh, I didn't know you just picked up on tax resolution in 2001.
I answered an ad.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, I was doing personal injury work in the 20th century. I'd been with a firm. I went out on my own, and I was doing my favorite part of the day, which was reading my junk mail. And I got this advertisement about an area of law where you work less, less pressure. Your clients like you. They like to pay you. The phone rings off the hook and it's easy. And I said, I can do that. So I called and I said, what's this about? And they said, solving IRS problems.
Okay.
And I said, okay, that sounds good. Let's do that. So I signed up and I started going to the seminars and I turned around and then I started teaching the seminars. And now this is all I've done all these years. But I really didn't have any tax background. And it's funny, Patty, when I teach CPAs, enrolled agents, and they're just getting into this business, they know more about it than I did. I had absolutely no idea. As a matter of fact, when I called my brother who did personal injury work and said, I'm going to start representing people with IRS problems, he said, do you even know what IRS stands for? And I had an international resource society. I don't know, but I think I'm going to do this. And I just went all in. And now this is all I do. I don't do any tax planning or I don't open up corporations. I don't give people advice how to stay out of IRS problems. I just get them out once they're in.
That's interesting. You're currently very entrenched with doing the workshops and seminars for the American Society of Tax Problem Solvers. A lot of us practitioners in this tax resolution business know them as ASTPS. Also, your three-year, it's a voluntary commitment to one of the IRS committees. You know, tell me how you even thought about doing that, applying to that particular committee. You know, what was your experience with that?
That's IRSAC, the Internal Revenue Service Advisory Council. And it's a three-year term. And I looked at it and I said, I really want to do this. I like talking to the people at the top. I have certain ideas of things that I think would make the IRS better. And IRSAC is something that the IRS takes very seriously. You're appointed to a three-year term. In my third year, I was the chairman of my subgroup, which was small business self-employed. And we meet five times a year in Washington, and we write a report and present it to the commissioner in the fall. And I was fortunate enough to write two reports, both which I think were well received by the IRS, and changes were actually made based on some of what I had in the report. One was on appeals and one was on customer service. So it was very, very rewarding. My 3-year term was up. I was very, very sad. But, you know, I really got a lot out of it. And it's great when you see what the higher-ups at the IRS are doing and what they're thinking.
Right.
Because they really have good ideas. They really understand what's going on. The problem is, it's like the old game of telephone. When it trickles down to the bottom, it's a whole new message.
Right.
Some of these revenue officers and revenue agents and even managers don't understand what the higher-ups want them to do.
Right. What's the title of the higher-ups?
Well, we see the deputy commissioners.
Oh, right.
They come and they talk and we hear them speak when I was with IRSAC. And, you know, these are the people that really, they report directly to the commissioner. The commissioner comes also, right, and we get a chance to hear what he had to say.
Right. And therefore, the way that the revenue officers or revenue agents or customer service are being trained, are you disappointed that even though you had changes as a result of a couple of your reports, which, by the way, that's awesome, you know, are you disappointed that you're not seeing that happen with the performance of the IRS employees that actually need to do that?
Some of it is that in any business anywhere, you're going to find people that are good at their job and bad at their job. And the IRS is not an exception to that. There are some revenue officers we deal with that really aren't very good. Some of them are excellent, but some of them just don't get it. They don't understand. They like to threaten before they resolve things. There are a couple of revenue officers, I'll call them on the phone and say, thank you for driving another person to my door, because their attitude makes the person say, I got to get some help.
Right.
And
right.
I've been fortunate enough, and just a couple of months ago, and this is the third time it happened, when they were training new revenue officers in South Florida, they called me to come in to speak to them and let them know what it's like from our side of the table. So I spoke for about an hour and a half, and the trainers are really good. They really are trying to teach them the right thing and how to deal with taxpayers. And, you know, some of them, as I said, you know, they're going to be good at what their job is. And some of them aren't going to be, and some of them may not last more than another 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. How do you get to be invited to do something like that? Is it because of your time with, is it IRSAC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing this for a couple of years. What I do is I stand outside the IRS office. When they say, what do you want? I said, I'm here until you let me in and talk to people. Now, it just, it's happened, you know, it initially happened. I got invited by a manager, and then I got invited by one of the trainers who had been there. And then I got invited by another trainer who was there when I spoke, when he first started. So, right. You know, it's just like they want to hear what it's like from our side. And they need to hear that the real purpose, you know, it is adversarial, but we can't treat it as adversarial. We have to work with the IRS, and they have to understand that when I represent a taxpayer, this isn't some big game where I'm trying to get my client off the hook and I'm trying not to give the IRS information. I'm trying to make a deal that my client can live with that is acceptable to the IRS. We have to work together. We can't treat this as you versus them. There's a couple of revenue officers that everything's adversarial. They're impossible to deal with. They're on my do not call list. I'll only fax them. I can't talk to them anymore. But the majority just want to make a deal and resolve the case. And that's our job. Because the difference, Patty, in what we do with the IRS and what, and I'm an attorney, I'm not a CPA enrolled agent. As an attorney, when you're representing a client, if you can't make a deal, a judge and jury make the decision. With the IRS, if I can't make a deal, They're the judge and jury. I've got to
Right.
come up with something that works for everybody, that doesn't set my client up for failure.
Right.
And at the end, no matter how difficult, no matter how knotted, how crazy the case is, at the end, we always come up with a resolution. And then in the beginning of 2020, I don't know if you heard about this in Boston. I know you don't get the paper. There was like this pandemic, and things kind of stopped. And that went on, and it kind of, as you remember, slowed down. Surprisingly, the IRS, while they kind of shut down the notice letters, they were still doing work. We were still doing business. People were still coming to us. And as COVID wound down, the rest of the world and the rest of the country just started to do things again. But the IRS was very slow to gear back up.
Right.
And at the end of 2023, the beginning of 2024, well, even a little before that, the IRS, the people at the 800 number, ACS, started sending out soft collection letters. These are the first time they've ever sent out letters where on the letters they didn't say, "And if you don't, we're going to do this." They were very
Right.
friendly. They had
Right.
QR codes, very high tech.
Right.
And then, and I don't know, I've never seen any studies how well that worked. Then at the end of 23, beginning of 24, they started sending out CP 504, intent to
Right.
levy cases. Now,
Right.
these aren't final notice of intent to levy, but they come certified and they were trying to scare people. But the
Right.
reality was nothing bad could happen if you ignored that.
Right.
And a few weeks ago in August, all of a sudden on a Saturday, one of my assistants had gone into the office. He called me and he said, "We got these LT11s, these final notices of intent to levy. We celebrated. This is great news for our business. Not good for taxpayers, but
Right.
these were the real letters. These are
Right.
final notice of intent to levy." So
Right.
what the and this is 4.5 years after COVID started. So what the IRS, so what these letters mean, and Patty, you know this, but just for the listeners, is the IRS sends these final notices and they basically say, you owe us the money. We've been sending you letters. We've been going back and forth. We really haven't heard from you. You really haven't come up with an idea of how to pay this money back because you owe this money. And since we haven't heard from you, we have an idea. We're just going to take your stuff and then
Right.
we'll be able to pay it. So we'll take your income, we'll take your bank account. If you're a business, we'll take your receivables, we'll take your credit card processing. We'll just start taking it, then we'll get all our money. And if you think this is a good idea, just ignore this letter, let us do our thing.
Right.
But if you don't like the idea and you have a better idea, in the next 30 days, we're not going
Right.
to do anything. We're going to give you time. In the next 30 days, ask us to speak to the Independent Office of Appeals. We'll hold off until you deal with them.
Right.
Now, a lot of people have ignored these letters and they've ignored their rights. If you're a practitioner, it could be almost tantamount to malpractice not
Right.
to request a hearing.
Yep.
And once we do that, and this is also driving a lot of people to our doors, and I don't know if the IRS, be careful what you wish for. They're sending these letters. They're going to get a lot of requests for appeals. I don't know if appeals is going to be able to handle all the requests. But what we do is we request an appeal, a collection due process hearing, where we say we have a better idea. Installment agreement, offering compromise, not collectible, penalty abatement, innocent spouse,
Right.
a lot of different things.
Right.
And that's what's going on now. So the important thing for taxpayers is you got to respond in 30 days. You got to protect yourself. Otherwise, you're at their mercy. For tax practitioners, request a collection due process hearing. Not every single time. There are times when it's not a good idea, like the statute of limitations is about to run and that'll stop it. But, look at the case and start making decisions to get the case resolved with appeals, because that's the place you want to resolve it with is appeals.
Absolutely. I actually wondered the same thing that you said. I thought of the same thing. Is appeals ready for this? I mean,
I think it's
are they actually informed that this is going to start happening, this influx of letters out to taxpayers?
That's a good question. I don't know, and I haven't had an opportunity to talk to anyone in appeals who would know the answer to that. But I do think, even though they have hired more appeals officers here in Florida, we used to have in South Florida, we had one unit. Now we have two units,
Well,
and they're really, they're hiring more and more around the state. So it'll be interesting to see. The reality is, although you and I and a lot of listeners know that you have to request collection due process hearing, most taxpayers don't realize really the severity of it. And a lot of practitioners, the CPA who's helping out their client, they don't really understand the importance of the CDP, collection due process. And the other thing about it, one of the reasons some of these practitioners don't understand is they hear the word appeals and think, well, this is a big thing. We can't do an appeal. What is
right.
that? Is there going to be testimony? Do we have to have the client there? What's this all about? But the
Right.
reality is that it's really a settlement conference where you get together with appeals and come up with a resolution.
It is. I mean, they call it an informal hearing. They use that language in the appeals officer does when they introduce themselves and say, I've been assigned to your case, and here you go. It's by telephone, unless you request in person or video, but the default is initially by telephone.
Yeah, and I haven't done any face-to-faces because I really just don't have time to go down there. There is an advantage to a face-to-face, and that is you don't leave until they give you what you want. But there's an advantage to seeing somebody in person. I haven't needed to do it. I've done a few Zoom conferences at the request of the appeals officers. Most of those are not on collection due process cases. They're on appeals on audit cases. And we've been very successful with that because in person or even on Zoom, it helps you a little bit with your relationship. You develop that relationship, you develop that trust with the other side. They're not going to go out of their way. They can't do something they're not allowed to do, but you're going to get the benefit of the doubt more often than not when you have that trust factor going. But there are some people over at the IRS who've never met me, and there's something to do, especially with collection. There's something to be said about being a little mysterious. I don't go down there. Sometimes they come to my office, they want to meet me. And I will tell you, every time I've ever met in person a revenue officer, it has increased our relationship going forward after that. And we have an advantage in South Florida because when they come in, we feed them Cuban coffee and that loosens them up right away. So it's a
Does
big thing. We just make up a pot of Cuban coffee and start pouring it down their throats and they're
it?
good to go. But
He's
that's
in.
it. I never want to have a case, and I've never had a case where a revenue officer handling collection, a revenue agent handling an audit, an appeals officer, a collection or audit says, have we ever had a case before? They'll always remember me,
Right.
hopefully for good. But
Right.
you want them always to remember who you are. I got to tell you a funny story, Patty. There was a new revenue officer called me, and I knew she was new because I didn't know who she was. So
Right.
I said to her, are you new? And she said, I'm not going to tell you that. And I said, why
Oh.
not? She said, then you'll take advantage of me. So,
I think she just told you.
yeah. And
Yeah.
they know who you are. There's nobody, we had an audit case, the revenue agent came. He knew about me. He found out about me in the office. He
Right.
looked at my website. He knew more about me than I did. I
Right.
asked him, what's for dinner tonight? And, did you speak to my wife, Irene, and ask her?
Right,
I mean,
right,
he knew everything about me. So they're prepared. They know
right,
what they're dealing with. And if you have a
right,
reputation of not cooperating,
right.
it's going to get down to them and you're not going to get anything good. Some people are like, well, don't be too nice to them. We want you to be tough. We want you to yell and scream and pound your shoe. That does
Oh.
not work. You can be nice and get the best deals you can get.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
amazing how well you can do by getting along as opposed to yelling and screaming. That doesn't work. When I'm dealing with a new revenue officer, whether
Right.
it's here in South Florida or somewhere around the country, I tell them what they need before they tell me. The first conversation will be, hi, how you doing? All right, listen, I got to get you the 433. I got to get you the financials. And we've got to catch him up. He's behind on the returns and we're working on that. We're going to get him to you this week. And as far as this year goes, he's got to start paying in, and we're going to have him pay in quarterly. So I preempt them and tell them what they need. And they're like, oh, wow, yes, that's exactly what I need. Thank you. So then they also know you know what you're doing and you know what needs to be done. And they don't have to sit there and explain every little thing to you. Okay, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's a great strategy because then they get to go back and say, yeah, that's exactly what I got trained on. And when I look at my internal revenue manual, that's exactly what I was supposed to have them know, you know, and okay, great, good. We're off to a good start. Hey, thanks for helping me out. I'm new. This'll work. But
Sometimes they'll say, do I have to go through everything I've got to say to you? Usually that's with appeals. And I said, yeah,
all
you can
right.
do that. Wait till I get off the phone. And then you can just tell me all that stuff. I
You
can't
actually
really
say
sit
that?
here and
That's funny.
listen to them.
I get asked that by appeals too.
Yeah. If they don't
I
know you the first time, they're going to have to run through, or a new appeals officer will run through. And a lot of times on a new appeals officer, they'll give her one of my cases. So, because they know it'll be a
Oh,
little
yeah.
easier for them to deal with. And I'll have the manager on the phone. And because the manager's on the phone, I have to sit there and let them go through all their little thing and ask all the stuff. And more times than not, with those new appeals officers, by the end of the conversation, I'm making the deal with the manager. We've like cut the
Oh,
appeals
yeah.
officer out. They're
Oh, yeah.
wasting our time. Here's what we're going to do. But it gives them some training what to do.
Right. And then they see how it results. You know, the
Yeah, you know, sometimes though, Patty, I say such dumb things and I'm trying to get like a laugh. I'm trying to loosen them up.
right.
And I usually count to three. And if I have silence, then it happened yesterday. I had a revenue officer, or no, it was an appeal. And we're done. I'm sorry. It was an audit. We're done with the audit, but my client hasn't filed 22 and 23. So she says, well, we can't conclude this because they've got the unfiled returns.
Right,
And
right.
I said, wait, you're telling me there's a requirement that they need to file tax returns? And I counted three. And when there was silence, I had to do the just kidding. And then she
Right.
laughed.
Oh, got it.
But that's my fault. My delivery was bad and I hadn't prepared them for nonsense. So they thought I was being serious. So I take the blame for her not laughing. But I try to listen, we're trying to resolve this. There's a lot of money at stake. We take it very seriously. But we can have fun doing it, you know, and we can enjoy our jobs instead of arguing and having problems with the other side. We could talk to the other side. We could talk to our clients like they're real human beings. You know, I
Right.
see that a lot when I get a new case and they've talked to other people. They haven't talked to somebody like me who's like talking to them like they're a person, not like I'm a CPA, I'm a lawyer, I'm an enrolled agent. This
Right.
is, it's like, they appreciate when you talk to them like a person because
Right.
they're scared. The taxpayers are scared. They
Oh,
don't
yeah.
need to feel uptight with their representative that their representative doesn't understand them and doesn't get them.
Yeah, good point. People want to be heard and understood. I think that's just human nature. I wanted to go back to the notice, LT11. You and I were talking about the fact that there's three types, you're running into three types of taxpayers that are getting this letter. It's the taxpayer that owes the taxes and just can't pay. It's the taxpayer that might be able to pay, but it's going to create a hardship. And I found really interesting, I wanted you to expound upon as well. The taxpayer that I believe you put it to me that shows high income and yet they can't pay. I found that interesting because a lot of people probably think that people with high income are just not paying their taxes. You know, why they've got the income, they have high income. What do you mean they can't pay this balance due? And I'm not sure how many revenue officers have that in the back of their mind. You know, it's almost like a prejudice, subliminal kind of judgment in the back of their mind when you're representing this type of taxpayer. So could you kind of expound on that?
So what happens is with a lot of people, the IRS kind of paralyzes them. They would never dream of breaking the law or doing anything wrong. But when it comes to the IRS, there's a mental block that they can't get over. It's just too much to think about. It's paperwork, it's numbers. It's just very overwhelming for them.
Right, right.
So we do have people that can pay and they fall behind and they're going to have to pay. Somebody will call me and go, well, I'm not paying the penalty and interest. I say, yeah, you are, because you got the money and there's no reasonable cause on the penalty. They don't waive the interest. You're going to pay it.
Right.
And then there's other, and those are easy cases. Then we have other people that are easy cases because they don't have the ability to pay. Life has happened to them. They owe money from the past when they were making money. They have nothing to show for it. Very easy to get an offer and compromise or not collectible. But the real challenge has been the people who owe a decent amount of money, not just a few thousand and not just hundreds of thousands. They owe, let's say, $100,000. That's a lot of money. And they're making, or even less than $75,000, and they make $180,000, $15,000 a month. It's a family of four. Well, the IRS looks at that, and on the face of it, they say, well, you could full pay this in 6 years. It's $1,000 a month or $1,500 a month. Just give us that. And I'll ask my client, how much can you pay them? And say, $300, $500 a month. Because right. The reality is that $15,000 that they have a month, they're putting no money away. That right. money is being spent, and they're not right. always living large. You know, they've got a car, two cars, they're making car payments, and they've got other expenses, some of which the IRS doesn't care about. The big problem is they're sending their kids because the public school is bad, a private school, and that costs a fortune.
Right.
So these are very difficult cases because I've got to convince the IRS that someone making this amount of money based right. on the IRS standards doesn't have $1,000 left over a month, only has a few hundred dollars left over. Very, very difficult for folks like this to catch up. But, you know, they've got to, the very first step, as you know, is you can't be a problem going forward. I can deal with the past, but you've got to file on time, pay on time going forward. And you've got to come up with a way to pay the past money. So they're doing two things they don't do, and that is
right.
pay the past and pay the current. And people say, I don't have the money. And it's like, that's unfortunately, everyone has trouble paying their taxes. You've got to find a way to pay going forward, and then we'll work out the past.
Yeah, the rule of thumb we both are aware of is if there's just so much money that you have available to pay, you stay current. You pay your current taxes, and then you negotiate and work with, you know, the IRS or even your State Department of Revenue. I want my child to go to college. All my entire life, one of my values was to send my kids to college. And it is tough, but the payroll taxes, I want to mention that people can subscribe to your Taxing Times newsletter.
Sure.
Oh, that's
yes.
great. Yeah, let them know how they can reach out to you to subscribe to that.
My email is steve@ Florida, spell out Florida, tax, T-A-X, solvers, S-O-L-V-E-R-S, floridataxsolvers.com. steve@floridataxsolvers.com. If you have any questions, call me. If you're a practitioner and you have a question on a case, just call me. I'll be happy to help you with it. If you're a taxpayer and you just have a question, you don't really need me, I'll lead you in the right direction. I don't right. want to ever, I always tell people, look, if it's something you could do yourself, I'll tell you. I don't want yep. you at the end to say I could have done it myself. Fortunately, most of the things they can't do themselves. Right. And if you want to give me a call, it's 305-682-1118.
Steve, I have known you 20 years now. We've been members of the Tax Defense Institute together. Obviously, it sounds like you joined right when you pretty much decided to step into the tax resolution business.
Right. I heard about Dan Pilla and his organization, and I called Dan and I said, this is the place for me. It's a wonderful organization for tax practitioners.
It is. You and I are on the advisory board of the Tax Defense Institute, and that's fulfilling in itself as well.
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
We have great practitioners on that and a great chat line where any question you can ask will be answered. And the seminars are the best in the business. The yearly conferences are fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're absolutely right that membership pays for itself all the time on that in value. So I just want to thank you. I can't thank you enough. I appreciate your time and value your input, your insights, your expertise, and always your lightheartedness and humor. So
all right. Thanks, Patty. It was great seeing you. I look forward to seeing you soon.
We hope you are enjoying this episode of the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment by simply subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are also excited to announce that the Fighting the Good Fight podcast is now available on YouTube. Just search Fighting the Good Fight podcast with Patricia Gentile, and while you're there, give us a like. The Fighting the Good Fight podcast is a Park City Productions presentation. Learn more at Park City Productions 06604 on Facebook or Instagram. I'm Patricia Gentile, and we'll see you next time.